Hello, welcome back to the Remarkable Podcast, where today, me and Steve, hello Steve.
Hello mate, you're all right?
I'm all right. We'll speak to somebody else doing something remarkable in the world, and today is a bit startup focused, right? And we'll talk to a guy called Omran Al-Habal, who runs an amazing community focused on startups based in Birmingham, but catering everywhere, like literally everywhere. And he's a font of knowledge under the world of startups and change and funding and things like that, which I think will be a super interesting conversation.
Yeah, he's a startup, two startups as well, which is really good to hear. So yeah, let's kind of have a chat with Omran and see what are the pitfalls and all the other good things that can happen from startup world.
Yeah, let's do that. But first, we need a little message from our friends at Bant.io, our lovely sponsors. So check this out and then we'll be back with the interview.
I love Bant.io, my favorite.
I love Bant.io. Amazing startup once upon a time. Who are doing amazing things. But yeah, check their message out, check their links in the bio, listen to the podcast, show them some love, and I'll check you on the other side. See you later. Hey, it's Tim. Just popping on before we hear from today's very remarkable person to introduce this episode's sponsor, Bant.io, the all-in-one B2B lead generation toolkit designed to automate your customer acquisition. Check them out in the show notes. All the links, all the info you'll need is in there. But now, let's get on with this show. Right, Mr. Rick, we better get our guest on, right?
Yes, let's crack on.
Time is of the essence. It's nearly October, which is scary as we record this, and it's freaked me out a little bit. But, you know, to unfreak me out and give you guys something to talk about, we've got a very special guest today. Omran, would you like to introduce yourself and what you do to the people?
Okay, hi everyone, and thank you guys for hosting me today. So my name is Omran Habal. I'm a startup coach and I'm the COO of Birmingham Enterprise Community, and on a daily basis I'm working with startups, entrepreneurs, people who are trying to build their dream businesses, at the same time those who started and they want the guidance to scale it up, getting to the next level. And that's whether they are in the UK or around the globe. We are working with everyone because, especially right now with this, with the pandemic and COVID, it's proven that there is no point of just limiting yourself to certain geographical areas. You can literally be anywhere and work with everyone.
So, yeah, that's
pretty about me. I think as we go on, I can know more.
More will come out, right? We will eke more out of you as that. But let's start with the BEC, shall we? So I'm familiar with it anyway. But for those people who aren't so familiar, you can probably describe it better than me, but like an independent, like holistic startup service, right? From kind of funded support to accelerators and stuff. Do you want to give us a bit of a lowdown on the work you do, like an example of the work you do there?
So Birmingham Enterprise Community was founded like beginning of 2019. The idea of it started as university students and recent graduates. They have at their universities, they have a lot of like enterprise and startup support. whether it's the incubators or access to experts or access to funding or access to facilities to like maybe build their MVP. However, and in the city as well, there's a lot of support. But you get surprised that those people are not always talking with each other as much. At the same time, you have the students in the university sometimes doesn't know about the support that's available for them. So we wanted, and the last thing, and because you've mentioned the independency, that we are independent. Most of the support available is funded by a certain corporates or a certain banks or certain entity organizations or governments. And with that comes restrictions, boxes you need to tick. And you can support X, you can support Y, and all of that. So we wanted to create something independent that can work with everyone. And whenever, at whatever stage you are at, you can come to us and say, I need support in X. And we can, if we can't help you, we can signpost you to the people and make you aware of the organizational support available in the city. Because it's mind-blowing how much there is out there, but not everyone is as good in shouting out, like, come here, we have the support for you. And it's really fascinating. So that's the idea of Birmingham Enterprise Community, to be a hub where regardless of what stage you are at, regardless of the support that you're looking for, even if we don't have it, we know who can give you that support, so we're going to help you reach out to it. That's why we have really good relationship with everyone. We can work with everyone. And that's whether like locally in the region, across the nation, all globally, we have really good relationships. And we really enjoy it because we learn from the people we work with as much as they learn from us. And whenever someone comes out and like, I want to access Argentina market, that's going to be like, okay, we need to get to that market for them. So we start building new relationships, expanding our business by supporting the others, which is really nice. And at the end, it's founded, it's by like support by entrepreneurs to the entrepreneurs, which is something I really like. So it's those who have done it providing me support or their knowledge, their experience. So those newcomers, let's say, avoid the mistakes that we've done or that we've done.
So with that, Omran, are you helping almost build the proposition with the entrepreneurs? Or are you testing out their proposition before they go to market? Or is any idea doable and scalable?
So basically, we have different programs depending on the stage that you are at. So if it's just an idea and you want to implement to make it a real business, there's a six-week program that we run where you come in and we're going to give you the right infrastructures and the right tools that you need to work with so you can have the right start for a successful business. And it could be something really simple as just like making you aware of if you're starting a business, don't right away give your partner 50%. Work with something called vesting agreement, which is just, you can find it online, download it, you both sign it, help you like protect your business. It's really simple, doesn't take more than an hour to be done, but it's protecting the business and making it attractive for an investor later on if that business goes big. So saving them that time and the struggle of having problems later on from the early stage. And then we have the accelerator program, where those who already have products in the market or already have an MVP, maybe they did sales already, but they wanted to take it the next step. And that's whether expanding to new markets or getting investment, building growth strategies. Those, we work with them for 6 months. So it's very intense. At the same time, through that program, we do soft landing support. So let's say you are like a business in... for example, there was like a biotech business in Costa Rica, and we worked with them online during the pandemic. We published even in the city. We worked with the PR of the guys are coming here. When they arrived, they already know the partners they need to work with. The partners already know them. They've started right away from the first week experimenting with their new product at the university's facilities in research and development. So they came in, instead of getting surprised of how the market worked, they're already familiar with it, familiar with the people they're going to be working with. And it's really nice to be working with someone, then suddenly you see the team physically here in the city, sitting with you in the same office. It's kind of, it's a nice feeling of achievement. You've done something, you made an impact, you helped them. They are here, they are working, they are doing something big.
I think that's really kind of valuable, like, and it runs off, just understanding the funding ecosystem, which I know Steve has got a bit of knowledge about as well, but understanding what's out there in its totality, right, and then being able to translate that and all of the stuff that goes with starting up, right, like all of the hurdles, all of the constraints, all of the possible wrong turns and kind of derailments that you faced in those early months, right, is like bringing that under one roof is why we invited you on this podcast, obviously, because I've been fortunate to be up to your place a couple of times and know you guys and recommend some people, and it really is kind of remarkable work you're doing, because it's difficult to start, right? It's like people, I think, under some kind of disillusionment how easy it is, because there's no end of kind of programs and gurus and consultants trying to get you to start all the time.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, if you look at the numbers, you're going to see like there's like thousands and thousands of startups starting every year. And every region start to show off of that number of like, yep, look at Companies House. We have a list of 1,000 or whatever started this month. Okay, it's really easy to start because you just need 10 minutes online, £12 in the bank, you have registered business. The trick is how many of these is actually surviving. So yeah, you can start, but are you committed? Do you have the tools? Do you have the accessibility? Are you willing to reach out for support or finding the right support so you can move forward with it? This is the question. This is where we're trying to increase the survival rate of those businesses being registered every now and then. Because even myself, I've done the mistake of starting a business. And, you know, when you are a business graduate, you think like you know it all. And like, yeah, I've started a business for 4 or 5 years. I know it. But it's no. It's bullshit. You don't know anything. That's only books. It's different in real life. So I found myself like, I have the VAT registered. I have this and that. And then a lot of things you might spend money on, and they are not necessarily at this stage. Focus on the real things. Focus on what matters. And so this is what we're trying to do with the people at the really early stage. Make sure they have the right infrastructure, looking to answer the right questions, so they can have like a good kickoff and having the right people around them. Because at the end, like you don't know what you don't know.
There was a stat, wasn't there, that I don't know if it was just product or service or companies involved, but 88% fail in their first year.
Yeah.
But it's huge. It's huge numbers.
Definitely, because it's not easy. Like even when we started, like we are a team of like experts, people, experience, know it all. For the first year, we've bootstrapped the whole year. And because of there's a lot of, and as I said, there's a lot of enterprise support in the city, what we had to do, we needed to prove ourselves, especially that usually when you tell someone you're going to run start an accelerator or incubator, they're going to say, you need £1 million investment to start something like this. Mm-hmm. Well, we started with like nothing. We put in our own savings. We said, like, okay, for this year, we're going to prove that we can do it. We start doing the support for free, reaching out for everyone, telling them what we do. At the beginning, people were a bit not... Some people didn't take us seriously. Some people, as I said, they said, you need £1 million to do this. And then next year, we found out that people are reaching out to us. And we don't need to introduce ourselves as when we did before. And even surprisingly, for example, doing the soft landing work, with international businesses, suddenly we started getting a lot of businesses from LATAM. And then we were asking them, who referred you? And they were like, Tony. And we're like, who's Tony? Like, who's this Tony? We don't know Tony. And then we figured out that Tony is like a part of the Global Entrepreneur Program. So he was like, he just knew what we do. And he believed it to like tell people to reach out to us and talk with us so we can get them the right start. And that by itself gave us a lot of pride in what we do, because it's not easy if you are in a position of, it's your own reputation. For example, like Tim or you, Steve, if you're going to be making an introduction to someone, you are responsible for this introduction. Because if that guy screwed up, you made the introduction, is going to go back to you. Yeah. So it was really nice to have that growth, but it wasn't easy. There was like really tough times.
There's something nice in that story that actually a startup is helping startups.
Yeah, exactly. Because we know the challenge right away. So we know the challenges. We understand how hard it is, and we always, all our programs, we start them with, okay, this is a session about entrepreneurial mindset. Oh, and I think we talk about the bad things more than the good things, because it is challenging. It is a lonely journey. You need to do 1, 2, 3. So it is nice. It is nice.
I think, you know, you mentioned in that bit of introduction there, in those last few paragraphs, that like one of the strongest things that I've seen from my like little bit of involvement with you guys is that kind of community, that connection you have to each other. Like a few months ago, some of a startup we're both kind of working with came up, didn't we, and went out for a few drinks and stuff afterwards. And like that group of other entrepreneurs, right, were hanging around, and you and Dan came out, who's your colleague there, your leadership team, right? And like it's having people going through the same thing, not just listening to people like me, do you know what I mean, or people like somebody telling them what they want to do or answering their questions, like, but having people like peers going through it is super powerful, I think. And I think, you know, it takes a lot of years of experience to understand the value in that inner circle, having that community, understanding what the value of mentoring or have people there. Like, took me 20 odd years to figure that out. And if you're getting it at the beginning, it's super powerful. And I think that's, you know, one of the intangible things that maybe these traditional funding, like government, local government funded, ERDF funded things can't do, because they're restricted, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like for us, because the community bit, it's really important, because people can relate to each other. So even when we started, you know, there's no way we could do what we've done, just me and Dan, when we started. We needed experts with us. We needed people that in each industry. So we started reaching to them and said, look, guys, we are trying to do this and we don't have money to pay you, but we need your time to support us if you believe in what we do. Some of those people, they are charging $1,000 per hour if you're going to be sitting with them, but they believe. And they were like, okay, we're with you. We're going to be helping you with this. They joined us as a mentor. They joined us as an expert to be with. And they keep working with us at the same time. We did a lot of deals where we went to people and said, we don't have money. We have something. We want to build community. And if you want to be part of this, are you happy to join us? We're going to work together. And you get surprised how many say, yes, let's do something. But always it's those that have the freedom of doing it and have that flexibility. And we want always the startups to connect with their peers. Because sometimes they think if they are facing a problem, they think they are the only one facing this. But when they get in touch with the others, they're going to see, oh, well, I had this last year, but this is how I solved it. And they listen, they can relate. Or they can work together to find, maybe they have the same challenge, they work together to build it out. And this is really important because it gives you a sense of belonging somehow, confidence when you go back to this group.
Yeah, I just wrote belonging down, actually. I was just, because you said a couple of really strong statements. Like, if you want to be part of this thing, we're over here. Like, and that's like that ethos, I think, was, it reminded me of a thing in one of Seth Godin's books, This Is Marketing, where it says people like us do things like this.
Yeah.
Right. And it says that's the ultimate marketing, like that's the ultimate brand, is having people like us do things like this. If you think you're like us, come over here and do this. It's safe, like we're all doing this thing. And it just super reminded me of that thought about brand, how it's human centered and emotive, and you're not on your own. It's not a tactical building thing. It's about belonging, right? And belonging is like, it's super important. Like, people, I think now, actually in my talk this morning, I was saying this, like, I think now people are searching for belonging. Like, the people are looking for meaning in the work they do, not just paycheck, right? Which is why I think startups are everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, true. And that's why it goes back into, like, they want a cause of, like, why I'm doing this. And that's like good, like the Simon saying, like, start with the yeah. Why, because it is, yeah, why you are doing this. It's like, by the way, it's very, like, some people are going to say, like, well, I'm doing it for money, and then they might feel bad about it. But no, don't feel bad about it. If you're doing it for money, do it for money. That's fine. And it's totally fine. And we all need money. But that's going to come by default. If you think about what you want, why actually you are doing it, or why you enjoy it, then you're going to really be excited all the time when you are working on your project or business. Because, again, going back to it, you feel belonging. You feel like, this is something I enjoy, I like. This is where I belong. This is where I feel I'm contributing. I'm comfortable. I'm producing something, making an impact.
On this podcast, we talk a lot about the human side of stuff, right? Like the human center at the, well, at the center of a lot of things. So, like, as a guy who has seen a bunch of startups, right, what's the biggest hurdle, like, human centered, like, people focused hurdle? Obviously having money and funding is great for a startup, so not money. Yeah. Like, but what's the skill or the mindset or the belief system that's the biggest hurdle, that's the most inhibitive for people to come over? What's the issue that people, that you see more often, do you think?
Those who believe they know it all. So I think you need to have the skill of, I'm going to listen and learn. Evaluate it yourself, but listen, take it in, evaluate it. See, is it, discuss with people what you are thinking and get their feedback. Because if you're going to be self-centered, people's going to find it really hard to work with you. And the other thing is, people who are overexcited. The overexcitement of, I'm building this product, and it's going to be this, and that, this. And you have like 100 things, like that founder talking about at the same time. And you need to just like trim it down into, let's just focus on the core now. What the solution, what you offer as a core. And we can add those things later on. But it's really hard to find someone actually understand this. Because we always get really excited and like, I can add this feature, I can add this, like, to the this click or this software or this and that. So they end up working in the business rather than on the business. So I think those two things are really important. And if you when you work as a team, you need to understand what everyone is working on as a founder. Like, for example, when I had my marketing agency, so we used to do websites. And the website developer that used to work with me, I would tell him day 1, 2, 3. And from when I look at the website development, for me, it looks really easy. So when it takes too much time, for example, to get it done, I would get frustrated or fuming of like, it's easy. You just need to do this and that. Why it's not working? After a few months, I started doing the website myself. And I called him. I was like, now I understand your struggles. Now I know what you mean. You had all the right to have all of this time. So if you're working with teams and you are team members, be understanding and know what they're working on so you can appreciate if when they face challenges. At the end, as a founder, it all goes back to you. And you are the one responsible, not your team members, because their mistakes might be a reflection of yourself didn't give them the right information or didn't tell them why exactly they are doing this. People hate doing things without knowing why they are doing it. So explain the process. Explain that it's like a domino effect. If someone is not turning up like early at work, it's not only the email that they didn't send, but it's like what that email is going to reflect later on through the process. This is really important because then they're going to have a sense of, I'm contributing to the big picture. My work is valuable to the big strategy of the business. And it's not only me coming to the office and doing like some data entry and that's it. No, you have the contribution to the whole system. And that's really important. I think those are the things that as teams or as a human need to be considered.
Yes, that visibility of ownership, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so powerful. People forget about that. You know, especially as you start to grow and you get teams in place and as you start to scale teams, we often think of what is the job to be done rather than actually the extra piece, which is how do we help that person develop and how do we help them become better and how do we want them to progress through their career? It's another job on top of the job.
It is 100%. And I'm going to be the devil advocate in here. I know startups can't afford training people all the time. You might do it later on, but at the start, you can't do as much, but not a lot. And it is a hard job to find the right people, but it is something goes on your shoulder as a founder at the end.
I think what's really interesting with that, because I'm involved in that educational world, and there is more good resource out there now than there ever has been that's free to access. You don't have to go to a university-led course. You don't need to go to a college on an evening class anymore. You can access things through like LinkedIn Learning these days and pick up a lot of really good information for what is £20 a month, you know. And back 10, 15 years ago, when I first went into education, if somebody said, oh, do you know what, you can get full GDPR certification and full working at height certification for £20 a month off LinkedIn, I would have said, you're absolutely silly. That's never going to happen because those courses are £400 or £500.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's there and it's available and it's quality stuff as well. It really is.
To be honest, the last few months of my master's, you know that you have 3 months to write your dissertation. So yeah. My dissertation didn't take a lot of time. So during that time, I did the Google Garage certificate.
Yeah, very much so.
I swear to God, like that certificate, it's for free. Doing that added knowledge none of the master's degree or bachelor's degree have at all. And that was only, it was practical things that I can start a business right away. I can really start promoting a product and have an e-commerce platform and have XYZ online and for free. Even it's not only teaching you to do it, it's for free. The things they tell you to do, you don't need to pay money to do them.
But it's kind of an interesting thing. Like I love a startup personally. I love working with startups because there's something about that's the energy in that stage, right, that makes it quite an exciting time. In fact, a lot of the kind of client and company work I've done recently is trying to teach big companies to think small, right? Yeah. To go back to that even if it's like a real example, which I've not done for a while, like is marketing strategy, right? And we've all had experience with marketing, and we know that like zero budget marketing, like making your marketing strategy with zero budget in mind, helps you create better ideas, because effective marketing is effective marketing. Money will buy you scale and speed, right? Yeah. But the ideas of being effective, as one example for people. So I just think there's magic in that time, right? And there's value in that startup mindset for a lot of size and organizing, especially ones that are going through change, which is pretty pertinent for the last couple of years, right? There's been a lot of so.
Have you seen, Tim, just recently, like a lot of the large, especially in the insurance industries? So I saw it again this morning with Admiral Insurance. They're starting up a whole new team internally, which they're not classing as an incubator. They're not classing as an innovator, but they're going, it is a startup mentality. It will be about rapid development. It will be service design led. It will be out there to prototype to market. And if it works, we'll build a new unit on the Admiral Insurance side for it. All these large businesses are going, we want startup. Because of that magic thing.
Yeah.
They realise they can't just keep churning what they've always churned, because there's no growth potential behind it now.
And McKinsey consultants don't have that answer. They will just give you a 30,000-page report, right? Yeah. It's not that. Sorry, McKinsey. I do love you.
Yeah, McKinsey, we do love you. I still read you out.
But it's fine. I just don't want a report. There's value in it. I've seen that a lot in kind of industries going through change. So a lot, I did a few years ago, a lot in manufacturing and engineering, who were doing the same thing, right? Yeah. Because their business model was traditional, let's say, right? They make some stuff, they sell the stuff, right? They import, they export, that sort of thing, right? It's kind of a simple business model, right? But trying to figure out what's next. There's a great Charlie Widow's company, can't remember it. I'm going to butcher its name if you listen to this, Charlie, I apologize. It's like Amiga Engineering, but down in Bristol, right? They internally, their software development team created a project management tool for innovation projects. Right, they just used internally to help them be better internally. But when people stopped buying large scale engineering thing at the beginning of COVID, that little creative team that was stuck in a little broom cupboard, a bit like Omran, down the bottom of their down the bottom of their building, right? While everybody else sold the big engineering stuff problems, right? Suddenly became the front line. They suddenly became the main revenue stream, because the board went, well, we can sell this software product. But they're like massive scale engineering things now have to be a tech company.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But that change in thinking, right, doesn't come naturally. I was going to say naturally or easy, but it's definitely part of the startup mindset, that going, actually, we can spin this out into a software product. It's a trait, right?
People are afraid of change. And when you have this big company, let's be honest, the decision makers are like old people that maybe not, they're not even involved in the operational of the business anymore. So that fear of change, the fear of giving the freedom of their young employees, for example, to experiment, I think that's what stops them. Right now is like, I think it's a bit changing a bit where, with universities, for example, where the companies come in and say, like, okay, we have this challenge and we need a solution for it. And then the students start working it out or like find something and then presenting it. There isn't cost on the companies, because they're just like doing that for them for free. But if they have a team of employees, they're going to be saying like, well, that's cost of me. If they're going to be working on this by just experimenting, how I'm going to measure the return on investment. And but at the same time, when they are forced to change, they're going to change. But who is going to be forcing them? Like, for example, the other day I was talking with someone who worked with the military recruitment for employees and stuff. And he was saying before COVID, all their work was like paper-based. Like, basically, there's no computers in their offices. They need all to be at the office at a certain time. It's very boring, old style. And with a big organization like the military, it's really hard to change. When COVID hit, suddenly they were forced to work 3 days at the office, 2 days at home. All of them had computers now. All of them have to use technology and softwares. And it became more attractive for the candidate to join now, because it's not all boring paperwork, but that's because they were forced to change. And all of us got used to Zoom calls. All of us got used to do things online right now. So it's looking at how possibly we can force, or the market can force the big businesses and big corporates, who's basically controlling the market, to understand that and start thinking, okay, we need to change. We need to do something different.
There's definitely been a power flip, hasn't there, on that front. You know, there's I was reading the other day that one of the biggest asked questions in interviews now is from the candidate to the employer, which is, and what did you do with your staff during COVID? So when an employer sits and says, well, you know, we had to put 70 or 80% on furlough, or actually we had to make X amount of redundancies, it starts to show that candidate that actually perhaps the business is in the right place going forward because it wasn't able to transform as quickly. And let's not undersell, you know, that word that everybody, you know, we skirt around quite often, which is that whole digital transformation piece. So a lot of companies need to go through some form of digital transformation. But I think we just use that word transformation as just a little add-on, where it is the key word in it. You are transforming what you do from analog to digital, from process to new design. Whatever it is a transformation. You will not be doing what you've done before.
No. And to be honest, there's backflip to it where... you can even now change a human with a software, which is kind of, it's not only companies need to transform, but at the same time, people's skills. Of what skills should I acquire so I can't be replaced by software?
Yeah.
Because as a big company, at the end of the day, the ultimate goal is making money. Regardless of how, like, even if you are a huge advocate for impact, if you are not making money, you can't make an impact because you won't survive to make the impact.
That's right.
And to make the money, how are they going to save costs? If you told them that I have a software that can replace five or fewer data entry people, they'd be like, great. If the government, if it wasn't the government preventing me from firing them, I would do that right away. So I think people need to now, especially the young, like if they want to, maybe not starting their own business, but they want to go into companies and innovate in the companies, they need to look what skills can't be replaced.
Because that's Industry 4.0, which is always high on my agenda. It's huge on my agenda, but it's not a scary thing. It should be embraced. So there was, when it first came around, there was a lot of discussion around robots taking people's jobs, which is just automation of job roles. And actually is in a lot of the areas where Industry 4.0 is really taking precedence is around safety in roles. So where you're not having to put somebody's life at risk, and are better off to put a robot there, then that's great. And that's perfect, and we should be doing that. But on the other hand, you know, I can't remember the exact statistics, so I'm going to make it up, but it was something like this, that Out of the 80,000 jobs that became null and void last year through Industry 4.0, i.e. a robot took over that job, over 120,000 new types of jobs have opened up that we don't train for. And most of those are based around the creative industry. So there's actually more jobs available. It's just that we're not teaching or asking people to look at the right areas to go and do.
I think it that kind of loops us back to that what kind of defining the magic in the startup mindset, right? Because it comes down to a people problem, right? There's some people at the center of everything, right? And it's the kind of cross-functional creative skills that are transferable, right, between projects, between teams, between industries, between business models. Like, and when I say creative skills, for those people who don't know, I don't mean like painting and pottery. I mean like the strategic business skills, like collaboration, creative thinking, critical thinking, so solving problems, and kind of just communication, right? The art of facilitation and presentation now, like after the last 2 years, must be high on the skill set need list, because who's not had to facilitate an online meeting in the last 2 years? Like, it's a skill, right? I have been on enough shit ones to know that it's not a wide taken skill by any stretch, right? There's a kind of an art to it. So what, you know, and Steve's very much in education and skill setting, and which is an industry itself that has been forced to change over the last few years, right? Yeah, like, it's gone through massive change, just colleges, just like FE, right?
Yeah, well, whole industries have had to go through huge swathes of change. I mean, you've got to remember, in education, it's such a blurred line between education and employment, because everything that you do in that teaching college university setting is to lead to some form of meaningful employment for somebody. It's that last stop, that last bastion for somebody to go and add towards our economy.
I think, you know, it's replicable, right? If Omran, obviously, I know, works a lot with local government and funding providers who are big, slow-moving things anyway. Like, we've all, like, you know, like, they're always, you know, I work with a lot of councils and stuff. A few councils, but they're, they're always, it's difficult to get a choice to test the thing. Like, the mindset of experimentation does not exist in civil service.
It's not allowed to, though, is it? It's too much red tape.
They're not good experimenters. And I think experimentation is, you know, if startup founders had the confidence to frame everything as an experiment, like, because experiments are cool, right? They can either go right or wrong, but they're both equally valuable, right, Amran?
No, it's like, it's all about experimenting. Like, your whole startup, your whole business, every aspect of it, it's about building a hypothesis, testing it, and see if it's working or not, improve it or change it. Everything, whether it's your product, you can create a product, test it, see if it's working, manipulation, move. Your business model, the same thing. Your team, the same thing. Your partner, the same thing. It's all about experimenting and expecting that there's going to be a result A or result B. It's not going to be always right. So 100% agree. It's all about building a hypothesis and testing it. However, build a hypothesis that you know it has the right inputs into it. It's not only about the outputs. So who helped you form that hypothesis or that experiment? Were they people experienced or relevant in their expertise into what they're doing? So is it the sales manager contributed to your marketing strategy, or is it your marketing manager contributed to it? Who put too much into it? Who knows what's there? It's about inputs, building hypothesis, check the outputs, and move on. Until you reach that, like, ideal stage of, okay, this is working for me, this is where I'm going.
I think that's super, super valuable point, like of spending the time to get the hypothesis right. It's not just exciting, bugger it, we'll test everything. Like test all the ideas now, right? Because that takes time and money and energy, right? Which is important in any business. But like we're all from have marketing experience in it. It's kind of akin to a marketing brief, right? If your marketing brief or website brief is shocking, like you are not getting a good website out of that brief. Like it's not going to be an effective kind of service thing, but it's super important to kind of focus on that. I think that you know, taking the time to upfront to get the right hypothesis before you go off testing is like a fundamental part, I think.
So let's ask on, man. You mentioned, you know, you work with a lot of startups, which is great. Have you noticed through the last, I hate saying the last COVID period and stuff like that, but because I want that word to just be banished now, COVID, but have you seen a lot more established business actually trying to tapping into your resource and your idea framework and your different processes because they've realized that they've almost got to change to survive?
Yeah. So what we did actually when the pandemic happened, right away we've created something called Reframe Series. Okay. And it was three workshops. We were running them online every week. And the idea of it was to reframe, like reach, change your plans, your strategy, your operations to keep up with the what's going on. So at the beginning, we thought it's going to be only startups joining and like those that, because we work with startups in like the early stage who maybe started, we're just like kicking off before we have like all the programs for the acceleration and scale ups. Anyway, we found out there's a lot of businesses who have been in the market for like 3-4 years, maybe 5 years. They've got really impacted by COVID. They've lost around 80% of their clients. They worked with us. They reviewed their existing business model and changed it to be right. And there was a lot of those who, lost their, like 80% of their clients, not only got back on their feet with the client, at the same time, they ventured in new services and new things to work on. So we've seen some of those, and it's quite interesting because at the same time we've seen those who didn't change. There was some companies like they were like as if they don't care about COVID. So and they're in their newsletters, in their projects, in their event planning, in their all their strategy. They were still operating as if there's nothing going on. They're like, guys, you can't do this. Like, you can't. You can't just like tell people, for example, we are doing a dinner. Like, how can you send your clients you are doing a dinner and it's not right to be in one place?
I think a lot of those companies started to get what we classed in our old podcast, Tim, around decision paralysis. they literally just went, oh God, we don't know what to do. Just let's keep our head buried in the sand and see what happens.
Yeah, it was crazy because at the same time, those companies, like their employees were like being redundant and then coming back to us asking for jobs. Yeah. And we felt sorry because we know the guys, for example, and we know that they are doing great. Why don't you change or adapt to what's going on? I know the hospitality industry got hit really bad, but you need to figure out new ways to survive. Because in times of things like COVID, you think survival, you don't think strategy, because there's a huge uncertainty to build a strategy right now. So you need to think survival, you are in survival mode. It's okay to have the big goal in front of you, but you need to think survival now. Don't build a strategy now.
So do you think that's going to happen more and more though? I think COVID was an eye-opener for everybody, how things can rapidly change very quickly, literally at one press briefing from Downing Street saying stay at home.
Yeah.
But I think this is the first time I've ever mentioned this on this podcast, but, you know, things like Brexit, we've got to see the real hard-hitting pieces from that yet, because we're still in this withdrawal agreement. That's going to take 2 or 3 years before EDRF funding starts to disappear and all these different things.
You know, and there's a lot of experiments now with, like, Innovate UK Edge, for example.
All these things, it's never going to change now. It's that COVID was one that everybody could see because everybody had to go through it, but it's just going to happen year on year or by year by year.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting seeing how people, as I say, it was an eye opener, and people need to understand, they need to move and take actions according to the context they are and the environment they are in. Lucky enough, to be honest, for us, it happens that a few months before COVID, we were already experimenting with online meets. So we were like trying Zoom, trying hybrid approach, trying to shift things online. And then when COVID happened, right away we were like, shit, we have everything in place already. It's just like, it was like this transition into it. And I think that's one of the advantage of being startup, because we had the flexibility to change quickly and we had the flexibility to experiment a bit before like even all of that happened. And this is why I tell, like, during the pandemic, when I'm doing the sessions, I was telling those who just started or the startups, I'm telling them, you have advantage over the big companies. The big companies, to make change, they need to go through a lot of processes. One, you can make easily, you can just like build a new process or change your logistics in a day or in a week. Well, they can. So you can have advantage over there. And people right now, they understood that instead of always looking for the brand, I need to look for the solution. Mm. So when people, let's say a simple example, toilet paper, there's no toilet paper in the market. No one's going to give a shit what is the brand of that toilet paper. Whatever is in the market, I'm going to buy it. At the end of the day, if it was nice, I'm going to stick with it. It was nice, good for me. So as a startup, don't be afraid that I don't have a big brand, no one knows me, so they might not buy my product. Well, they don't care about the brand. If you have a solution, they're going to buy it. They're going to get the solution. If your solution is right, it's going to stick in their mind, and they're going to go forward with it. And that I think that was a huge advantage for startups and people who started during the pandemic, because people didn't give a shit about the brand. They were like caring more about the solution, because right now finding the solution that is really not available in the market.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you start thinking about brands and brands developing and working small, agile, working towards, you know, bigger brands. I mean, one of the best ones, Nintendo. Nintendo have been around for like 200 odd years and started off as, I can't remember what it actually was, it a playing card company, but then it went into open up hotels and all these different things, and now it's the Nintendo that we know today. Yeah. But they follow what the market needs at that point.
It's one big, like, great as well example, Clubhouse.
Yeah.
So yeah. Clubhouse, it was like before Clubhouse, there's something that was really similar to it.
I can't remember the other one.
Anyway, but it was like something to do the same.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
With what we'll do.
Yeah, we'll
have a look.
probably had it once.
Yeah, it was like a walk-talk thing. But and when they started Clubhouse, they started it as it's going to be for singers. Singers and rappers only, and it's a music platform. And then where people were isolated, feeling lonely, depressed, and sitting there at home, they just want to talk to someone, they are locked down, suddenly Clubhouse came in. And I remember when it first started, people would get so emotional in the rooms, they would cry. Most of the time, you find like multiple people crying in a room, like talking about random topics at the same time. There was this building of relationship where people literally 24 hours on Clubhouse, because it provided them with something that was really missing in their life, connecting with people. And it's a genuine connection. So usually you're going to write a tweet, you're going to think about it, you're going to edit it, you're going to Photoshop the photo you're going to have. If you are running a podcast, you're going to edit the podcast. While on Clubhouse, it's going to be genuine. If you are a genuine guy knowing or girl knowing what we're talking about, people are going to click with you. But if you're bullshitting around, right away they're going to know. Right away they're going to know. You can't hide it because it's live and you can't edit it. And that, and it was the right timing and the right shift from just focusing on a market of singers to pivoting into, wow, that's huge. There's a lot of things we can do here.
Is it still going, Clubhouse?
It is still going. And the
is it?
Thing, yeah, and the thing is, the other day I was in, and you have investors on there, so you have an investor sitting there listening, so you have like a startup pitching room.
Yeah.
People coming in, pitching their startups, and there's investors sitting on their couch listening. They're like, I like your idea, send me your pitch deck. You wouldn't do that. Usually you would need like a setup and an event.
Yeah, yeah.
And run a competition and you might get the chance to be in front of the investors, might not. Well, right away, you are there. You've screwed investment sometime. So it is quite interesting. And how often you're gonna find, for example, the CEO of Facebook, the CEO of Shopify, the CEO of Spotify in the same room talking with each other about the future of social media. And you can engage and ask a question.
Let's be honest, if that group of people were in a room together discussing stuff, we would all be sitting there going, the world's going to end at some point. They're there to take over.
Yeah. And guess what the funny thing? The founders of Clubhouse, they are always in the audience just listening. They don't join them.
Okay.
They're just like listening to their strategies.
Yeah, interesting. It was like I noticed that Twitter came out with, what did they call it, Spaces, didn't they, very briefly?
Yeah.
I think it still exists. I did one on when I first got granted access to it, and there was me, a couple of guys I know, a restaurant chain owner in America joined in, and then a priest in Kenya who was a marvelous man and gave us a song. Came on. Amazing. And the beauty of connection of the internet, I think, right?
Yes. Well, I was doing, and I did a room, so like providing just like tips for startups, and then there was this lady. She asked a question, and then she just sat there. She didn't engage more. After an hour, another girl came in, and can't remember her name, and anyway, like, are you Alex? Like, she was like, yeah. Are you the real Alex? She was like, yeah, I am the real Alex. She was like, oh, I love you so much, blah, blah. I was like, who's that? I searched her on Instagram, and turns out she's like a Hollywood star with like 3 million followers on Instagram. Right away, screenshot the room, signed her in, shared it on my profile. Right away, she put it like this, and she shared it on hers. I got exported for 3 million people, for nothing, on like doing nothing, you know what I mean? And those are the things that would, wow, that's
crazy.
I'm gonna have to start using Clubhouse more. I'm gonna have to, because I joined it in its boom and was there for about 10 minutes and went.
Yeah, I think you should, it's really nice. It's really nice.
That is good. So I think to start to round up our conversation, we're in a good little place, Imran. So with, you know, the ability to do startups with organisations like yours, making it super easy, and there's plenty of opportunity because we've discussed how much change is happening in a bunch of industries, if not every industry at the moment, right? Like, what do you think, as a bit, nobody will listen to this episode, so you'll be fine, right? But what do you think the world needs? What does the world need somebody to start? We'll end with. What's the next big thing? What's the gap in the markets that you see with all your knowledge? And it counts as an NDA legally, I think, yeah. I'm here. So
I think
any ideas are great.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you can build on, I don't think I'm going to be able to tell you a certain specific gap. Well, you know, when we were talking about communities and people are looking for community, I think any business based on people and based on what's called the shared economy, that's the future. That's where we are going. It's about connecting people together. If you can get that right and have that value exchange where whether I'm a service provider or I'm a buyer, we are both getting genuine value from your company. I think that's the future.
I 100% agree. I even know what the idea is. I just don't know if I should be sharing it.
That was a great answer for somebody to build a remarkable business about that connection and shared economy. I think is amazing. So Omran, thank you very much for being today's guest on the podcast. How can people get hold of you and check you guys out on the internet that we will put in the show notes as well, but let's just let people know vocally.
First, thank you so much guys for this. Really enjoyed it. Well, they can check us on birminghamenterprisecommunity.co.uk and if you want to get in touch with myself, Omran Al-Habbal on LinkedIn, I'm happy to answer any questions, anything I can do or support with. And Birmingham Enterprise Community on LinkedIn is really active page, and it is genuine startup and entrepreneurs people in our page, so we don't have the random followers and random likers on there. So I would encourage you to be part of it, because you never know, you might find your next partner or your next supplier or customer on there. And anything we can help, happy to do.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We'll put all those links in the show note, people, as well as our sponsors, bank.io will be in there. Links to me and Steve, if you want to chat to us on the off chance, you can do that as well. But otherwise, we shall catch you next episode. Cheerio.
Thank you.